Commission prepared by the Eurozone countries, Tsipras accepted these demands as the basis for negotiations, and talks lasted well into the early morning hours of Monday, European time. The Italian and French interventions apparently had some effect. Late-night negotiations between Merkel, Tsipras, Hollande, and EU Council President Donald Tusk reportedly ruled out the transfer of Greek assets to the Institution for Growth and a Grexit, at least in the short term. With the Brussels talks, Greece has emerged as the epicenter of a deep crisis of European and world capitalism. Already in 2010, the initial outbreak of the Greek debt crisis revealed sharp antagonisms in Europe. German Chancellor Angela Merkel agreed to an EU bailout of Greece only after late-night discussions in which then-French President Nicolas Sarkozy threatened to pull France out of the Eurozone and warned that lasting damage to Franco-German relations would result. Jean-Claude Trichet, the head of the European Central Bank at the time, said Europe was facing the most difficult situation since the Second World War, perhaps even since the First World War. Merkel, for her part, vetoed Sarkozy's plans to set up a Mediterranean Union, regrouping France and the southern European countries. She warned that a polarization between southern Europe and a northern Eastern European bloc, including Germany, could lead to the disintegration of Europe. 5 years later, under conditions of a far deeper social crisis in Europe, the potential division of Europe into blocs has starkly emerged over the question of a Grexit. The main opponents of a Grexit are France, Italy, and Spain, while the drive for a Greek exit from the euro is spearheaded by Germany, Finland, the Netherlands, and right-wing Eastern European regimes such as Slovakia and Lithuania. As divisions within Europe intensify, the conflict between German and American imperialism over who will be the final arbiter of European politics emerges all the more clearly. While the Obama administration has consistently exerted pressure on Germany behind the scenes to agree to a deal with Greece, Washington publicly intervened last week to back France. U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew called for a Greek EU deal on the austerity and debt restructuring for Greece. He implicitly targeted Berlin and its allies, criticizing those who create more of these kind of life-and-death deadlines. Berlin rebuffed Washington's concerns, with Schäuble bluntly replying that debt restructuring was contrary to European rules. Also today on the World Socialist website, FBI Director Comey demands backdoor access to encrypted data. WikiLeaks email release reveals hacking by governments worldwide. Baltimore, Maryland police chief fired under pressure from police union. Two Detroit firefighters injured fighting blaze with low water pressure. Manchester protesters face eviction as UK rough sleep rises. You can find these articles and so much more today on the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Nerissa Diaz for the World Socialist website.
Nuestra querida patria. Y desde estas montañas de Morazán, heroico e invencible, la voz del pueblo, que también es canto y poesía, te acompaña en todos los momentos del combate. Trabajador, obrero, campesino, estudiante, comerciante, señoras de los mercados, que cada día te unas fortaleciendo así la organización popular. Recibe nuestro combativo y revolucionario saludo. Estos son los progoses de Morazán, expresión musical de la revolución salvadoreña.
Muy buenas noches, bienvenidos a un programa más de Centroamérica sin censura. Su servidor, Francisco Martínez. Esta noche del día martes 16 de junio, Centroamérica sin censura les presentará tres entrevistas. Una de ellas con el señor Carlos Ortez, quien nos hablará de un proyecto social con base en el arte culinario al servicio del arte y la cultura social. Además, también les presentaremos una entrevista con la señora Marta Ugarte, quien estará con nosotros para hablar del impacto de las vacunas en nuestros hijos. También les presentaremos una entrevista hecha al señor Werner Marroquín, quien es diputado en el Parlamento Centroamericano por parte del FMLN de El Salvador. Él nos hablará de la celebración del Foro de Sao Paulo aquí en Los Ángeles este próximo fin de semana. Así es que, amigos, no se vayan, quédense con nosotros.
Por nuestras libertades, la Fuerza Armada que dice ser muy fuerte, pero con la guerrilla no le ha salido nada.
Muy buenas noches, amigos, estamos de nuevo con ustedes. Este es su programa Centroamérica sin censura. Su servidor Francisco Martínez, y en la línea telefónica tenemos a nuestro invitado especial, el señor Carlos Ortez, de el restaurante Un Solo Sol Kitchen. Muy buenas noches, don Carlos, gracias por estar con nosotros.
Buenas noches, Francisco, gracias por la invitación y un saludo cordial a toda tu audiencia.
Gracias a usted por aceptar la invitación. Tenemos entendido que ustedes están desarrollando un proyecto muy importante, orientado en tres diferentes áreas, pero voy a permitir que sea usted quien nos hable de eso, por favor.
Bueno, el restaurante lo iniciamos en el 2010. Básicamente, desde entonces hemos tenido tres líneas de acción. Una es la promoción del arte y la cultura, y siempre va a encontrar en las paredes el arte de alguien, algún artista local que se está exhibiendo, ¿no? Lo otro es promovemos la unidad de la comunidad, y precisamente este evento de cenas comunitarias, que le llamamos, es eso, o sea, que la comunidad en general, de Boyle Heights primordialmente, pero está abierto a todos Los Ángeles, ¿no?, puedan venir y puedan, you know, compartir con todos un momento agradable comiendo. En esta ocasión van a ser pupusas, o sea, una comida centroamericana, salvadoreña. En otras ocasiones son enchiladas o pozoles, y de esa manera podemos intercambiar ideas y promover la unidad de la comunidad y gestionar sobre cosas que la comunidad le inquietan y quieren cambiar o quieren modificar o quieren agregar para el bienestar de ella misma, además de conocerse entre ellos mismos, ¿no?, entre los mismos miembros de la comunidad. Y lo tercero es que el negocio, pues, es un restaurante, y tratamos de que ver a la comunidad una opción saludable para una comunidad empobrecida. Por lo regular, en las comunidades nuestras, lo que le proveen son comida chatarra en general, especialmente las corporaciones. En el caso nuestro, pues, es una comida que el restaurante ya ha tomado fama de ser vegano y vegetariano, aunque servimos carnes, pero no es la primera opción de todo el mundo. Eso es básicamente los tres campos de acción.
Con relación al arte, usted me hablaba fuera del aire que habían trabajado en un proyecto reciente en donde varios artistas habían participado. ¿Me podría hablar un poco de ese proyecto?
Lo que es, le hablaba, es de que hay un mural que es el arte emblemático. Siempre hay diferentes artistas que están presentándose, como mencionaba antes, su arte, ya sean pinturas, ya sean fotografías, así como también música en general, o sea, de sus propias creaciones. Tenemos un pequeño stage, un pequeño estrado ahí dentro del restaurante, pero en la pintura emblemática, la que es nuestra mantra, la que es nuestro, como dicen en inglés, go by, es como se llama el Un Solo Sol, el mural Un Solo Sol, que fue elaborado, que fue creación de Rafael Escamilla, un artista muralista salvadoreño, local, de aquí de Los Ángeles, y es básicamente un sol, y el sol nos está describiendo la historia realmente de la humanidad, y más que de la humanidad, porque data desde lo que se conoce como la gran explosión, o el Big Bang, y enmarca todas las facetas que el mundo ha pasado, desde cuando éramos recolectores y cazadores, hasta cuando se formaron los primeros imperios, y ahora la fase en la que estamos, que es de muy poca autosostenibilidad de la humanidad en sí, gracias a la depredación de todo nuestro medio ambiente. Así que le han dado un mensaje, y el mensaje realmente dentro de ese mural que se llama Un Solo Sol es de que debemos de crear más empoderamiento de las comunidades y crear movimientos sociales, no nada más locales, pero a nivel mundial, y que podamos transformar la sociedad, el mundo en general, de esa manera. Es básicamente el mensaje del bello mural colorido que creó Rafael Escamilla.
Usted mencionaba también de que ustedes tienen espacio, un stage, decía, donde pueden participar artistas. ¿Ustedes abren ese espacio para artistas en general que quieran participar y traer el arte ahí a su restaurante?
Sí, se ha abierto en varias ocasiones. Preferimos que sea sus propias creaciones, ¿verdad? O sea, promover sus propias creaciones ahí, en lugar de promover a un artista que ya tenga un reconocimiento en las radios comerciales, por diferentes razones. Una es porque hay que promover el arte y la cultura de las comunidades, y por lo regular, a pesar de que en Boca ya hay al menos 3 Grammys, aún así le podría decir de que es una comunidad de artistas y que constantemente están generando arte en sus diferentes formas, ya sea arte plástico, como arte musical, todos los otros diferentes artes.
Si alguien de los que están ahí escuchando este programa esta noche quisiera, como dicen en buen salvadoreño, darse una vuelta ahí por el restaurante, ¿a dónde queda? ¿A qué horas abren? Y bueno, ¿con quién pueden hablar ahí en caso que quieran más información?
Pues hablarían conmigo, aunque pueden dejar razón con las personas que atienden, que están en el restaurante, pueden hablar con Ismael. El restaurante está localizado en el 1818 del este de la primera calle, 1818 East First Street. Se encuentra enfrente de Plaza Mariachi, una bonita plaza más o menos nueva, se abrió en el 2009. Abrimos de miércoles a domingo durante el almuerzo, cerramos durante la tarde y luego abrimos nuevamente a las 5 hasta las 9 de la noche todos los días.
¿Tiene algún número de teléfono donde le pueden llamar?
Claro que sí, el número de teléfono del restaurante es el 323-269-8680.
Claro que sí. Bueno, amigos, ya escucharon información muy importante para nuestra comunidad, Un Solo Sol Kitchen. Y el encargado, la persona con la que hemos hablado esta noche, el señor Carlos Ortez, como ya lo dijo, ustedes pueden llegar ahí, ver el arte, y bueno, todo lo demás ya depende de ustedes. Así es que gracias por haber estado con nosotros, don Carlos, gracias por la información, y ojalá que volvamos a tenerlo en nuestro programa para que nos siga hablando de todo lo bonito que está pasando ahí en ese restaurante. ¿Hay algo más que quisiera agregar?
Básicamente, nuestro mensaje de siempre, ¿no? O sea, de que hay que hacer todo lo posible dentro de su propia comunidad, de empoderarlo. Realmente ahora que en todo Los Ángeles se está dando un periodo de aburguesamiento de las comunidades y muchas de nuestras comunidades pobres están siendo desplazados, ¿no? Entonces el empoderamiento es tan importante como para, y el promover el arte y la cultura es tan importante como para poder empoderar la comunidad y poderse mantener firmes en ella.
Una vez más, 1818 en la calle Primera, así es que amigos, ya saben, y ojalá pues que volvamos a tenerlo, don Carlos, aquí en este programa para que sigamos hablando de las cosas buenas que está haciendo nuestra comunidad. Pase usted muy buenas noches y gracias.
Muy buenas noches, Francisco, y saludos a todos.
Igualmente, sí. Cuídese mucho, hasta pronto. Y efectivamente tenemos con nosotros en la línea telefónica a la señora Marta Ugarte, quien es una madre de familia cuyo hijo fue lesionado por una vacuna. Queremos agradecerle, señora Ugarte, por estar con nosotros. Gracias por haber aceptado nuestra invitación. Háblenos un poco de este tema, ya que tenemos entendido de que ustedes también ahora este día tuvieron una conferencia de prensa.
Y es todo con este programa. Entonces, mi programa se llama Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, y es en inglés. It will be in English, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. I'm covering homeless civil rights stuff, upcoming protests this weekend, the survival sleep out, or homeless lives matter, or community camp out, you name it. It's got a number of names. It has to do with challenging the anti-homeless laws and practices of the city as enforced by the Santa Cruz Police Department, Parks and Rec, and other agencies that make it illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz on any public property whatsoever, even in your own vehicle legally parked, causing 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people a night to be in bad shape. Illegal, that is. So we're going to be doing a protest, and you'll be hearing more about it, but I'll be back, and hopefully so will you.
care to the poor. Food stamps for the grocery store. But now there's work there. You know there's been a switch. The poor sweep up the streets, and welfare's for the rich. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. High-class bandits bought some banks, withdrew all the money, banks. The SNL bailout, $1 trillion they said. It's all getting paid back with the taxes from your pay. And it's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. See those corporate hustlers go. Big Pentagon portfolio. They make some payoffs and get billions back. They travel away real fast in a welfare Cadillac. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. Don't live alone in just one job. Work fair. Don't get old. Don't get sick. Work fair. Leave the easy life to the slick. No free rides and no free. Guess they'll show those welfare cheats assistance vouchers. Make you look seedy. Forget that school lunch kit. Lower taxes for the greedy. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay.
And that's our momentarily new theme song due to some unusual operational changes here. Working People's Music Tape, the Ray Corona Band, Work Fair Life. And you are indeed tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. And this is indeed Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I say that because I think I've got a lot of listeners who, or at least some, who tune in with some regularity and know that this is my show, and they kind of know what to expect. For those of you who don't, I'm going to be reviewing some opinions on the street, and from folks who are outside on the ongoing shelter crisis, the crisis with people being arrested and hassled for sleeping. It's kind of the same story that you hear twice a week, actually, on my show, as told by different individuals. It's like, I don't know, a couple thousand voices over the years saying pretty much the same thing, but giving it their own unique experience. So what we have, in fact, here are facts about what happens on the streets. At least these are the accounts of people who claim they are the facts. And I think, based upon my experience, you can kind of tell when people are exaggerating. At least I find I can, by questioning them closely. I don't do the interrogations the way police officers might, by going over again and again a person's story. My point is not to seek for criminals in the people I interrogate, so I don't do that. I'm simply looking for their experiences as they view them, as they think about them, as they remember them. And you know, memories are faulty. People are not used to speaking into a microphone or into an audio recorder. So you get awkwardness. People are not used to often expressing themselves to strangers. And to many folks, I'm a stranger. Some think I'm stranger than others. But that's another story. So that's going to be happening today, as it always does. I'm also going to read from you a few stories that I picked up on the media. And the papers are covering the homeless. Well, it's been a crisis for decades, but the crisis, as the Chronicle sees it, for example. San Francisco Chronicle has a front page story, homeless in the city growing older and sicker. And it's it's interesting the way they phrase it. The first sentence is, the number of homeless people on San Francisco streets has stubbornly remained nearly the same over the past 2 years, and that population is now sicker, older, and being shoved into different neighborhoods by gentrification, new city statistics show. The word stubbornly, right after homeless people, it is true, it refers to the number of people, but there's a little kind of inference there that these homeless people are stubbornly staying on the streets. In fact, what's happening is those who had, housing that was built decades ago has been torn down. Single-room occupancy hotels have been destroyed and replaced. Apartments that were more affordable than those that are currently the Cadillac-y apartments in San Francisco that are not really Cadillac-y at all, but just get Cadillac prices, are not obviously accessible to more and more people who lose their jobs, lose their savings through health problems, through the relatives' health problems, through foreclosure problems, and They need cheap housing. It isn't there. Instead, the people who run these cities, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, you name it, their priority is funding or getting funds from developers and real estate interests, and they don't really give a shit about poor people. Now, they have to, at least, let's put it this way, they probably think they give a shit, because a lot of the folks that, you know, will tell you, and they'll say it not because they're insincere, but because they prioritize it at a level which is beneath a number of other things, like getting reelected. That's one of their main priorities. And the money for reelections doesn't come from homeless people, and it doesn't come from social service providers. So I'm telling you, I'm sure, all something that this is nothing new. But point is that the story blaming the homeless is the latest way of middle-class people avoiding a guilty conscience. And it's suggesting that they're really trying to solve a problem, but these homeless people are difficult. They have mental problems. They're alcoholics. So they have these things that drive them onto the streets that we can't control. We can offer them services, but if they don't want to get into the services, or and these are expensive services, can't afford them all, well, that's certainly too bad. But at least they die 20 years younger. Now, they're not going to say that, of course, but that in fact is the truth. Homeless people die 20 years younger, and they also have a victimization rate from assault in Santa Cruz. It was 4 to 10 times the assault rate of people who are housed. And it's I don't want to even take a guess at how much they are at risk of losing their property. Partially because of a really intolerant, abusive, and vicious system that believes that you don't even want to provide bathrooms and open toilets. In San Francisco, they actually have those. I don't know how effective they are or how. I haven't really gotten that kind of information recently, but they did open bathrooms, I think, some of them 24 hours a day. Santa Cruz has one porta potty open 24 hours a day, and I was told there were supposed to be two opened up because of the initiative of, surprisingly, Pamela Comstock, a very conservative Take Back Santa Cruz co-founder, who is also on the city council. However, the latest article from Good Times claims that there's only one that's going to be opened up. I sent Pamela Comstock an email asking her if the staff is again trying to sabotage her proposal, as they did at the June budget hearings, unsuccessfully attempting to sabotage it. I don't have any response yet from her, nor do I hear that she's on vacation. So I'm not sure what the story is. Comstock has half the time responded to my emails, so she may be getting back to me. We'll see about that. I may be getting a call from one of the broadcasters who does a regular show concerned with, often with a number of things, but Israeli-Palestinian affairs. And he wanted to make an announcement on my show. I've not been able to reach him, and I've mislaid his phone number. So, broadcaster, if you're listening in, you do have my permission to come into the studio if you want to make an announcement or if you want to call in. That's fine. No problem with that. And I will try to find your number. I just got back from Berkeley, where I picked up, for those who are interested, the new Street Spirit, which is the monthly paper sold by homeless folks, some homeless folks, for enough money to, you know, sit at a Denny's table for 45 minutes before they may kick you down the road. Or Starbucks, apparently, is also cracking down or tightening up on people who look poor, even people who spend money who look poor. It's a nasty scene, and it's something we have to fight. Huff, the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has done stuff about that in the past. We haven't got anything immediately in the hopper. We were protesting in the past by doing curbside coffee that we did outside of I guess it was the coffee roasting company, and across from Starbucks in downtown Santa Cruz to protest, effectively protest, it turned out, their policies in not allowing backpacks in, unless, of course, they're the student backpacks or the traveler well-to-do backpacks of our European visitors. And they changed their policies, or at least they seem to change their practices, so it can happen, but we haven't. Right now, the focus for a number of us is on the sleeping ban. Sleeping bans generally, but particularly the municipal code that criminalizes people for sleeping at night. And actually, we're also going to have to go after the park closing laws, because that is being used as frequently as the sleeping ban. Well, perhaps not quite as frequently. I've been looking over the tickets in the city council's office, where they, in response to my public records request, have sent the citations and determined, I don't have the stats with me, but it seems to me there are about as many citations and then stay-away orders, because every citation is followed by a stay-away order, even though such orders are discretionary. The police officer or ranger does not have to give such an order, but they are habitually doing so. But stay-away order, the citations for being in a park after dark are about as numerous as the sleeping ban tickets. And so our protest this weekend, which is going to be the second in a continuing series, hopefully of escalating protest, because we hope that others will join us and speak out to city council and the police department and those who are, I would call it NIMBY or bigot-minded, because that really is what it is. I'm sorry, you know, we could play patty cake with this one. We could be nice and talk polite, but that really is the story. There is a rather pervasive, if we're against blacks, you'd call it racism. And, you know, if we were in a classroom, you could call it, no pun intended, classism, in the sense that it's against poor people. But these are kind of highfalutin words. You know, what it is just plain prejudice. It's a form of nasty prejudice against poor people and fear. And it involves scapegoating. People want to do something about the growing immiseration of everybody, the rents that are rising, the jobs that are fleeing. It's not that crimes are increasing generally, but there's an increasing tension. And who do you blame? Well, the guys in the bushes. Why not? And yeah, the guys in the bushes, they'll probably be stealing more food now that they don't have the meals out at the homeless lack of services center. You know, people are going to go eat. And it's part of human nature. And the notion that you can resolve all this by sending in more police, first of all, it kind of is brutal and abusive and expensive. But second of all, it's futile, I think, ultimately. Unless you really want to get serious and start cutting off people's hands and, you know, engaging in the kind of more severe punishment and snitching around the community that I guess some people want, but I sure as hell don't. And that's one of the things I talk about on Free Radio a lot. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be back. If you want to call in with anything that struck you while I've been talking, or if anyone has struck you, we can talk about that assault as well. And I'm inviting you to come down to this Sunday night sleepover, the sleep out. We're going to be doing it. We haven't yet revealed the exact location, but we are going to start at the main post office around 6:30 at night after the Food Now Bombs meal, and then we're going to choose our location. May already be chosen, actually, but we're going to sort of have to talk it over with folks a bit, at least. And then around 9:30, we will be making a stop. Who knows? Maybe we'll be staying at City Hall, where we'll be serving a moonlight meal. That means, actually, probably peanut butter sandwiches or something relatively modest, but, you know, that will fill something of a hole in the stomach and maybe have something hot to drink, that as well. And then we'll be going to the place where we're going to sleep for the night or where we're going to sleep and as long as we can. Because people need legal places to sleep, and Santa Cruz and the city council has shown no inclination to do anything. Now, it is true that as a consequence of the last protest we had, which was 2 weeks ago on Saturday night, July 4th and then July 5th, all of us, many of us, well, actually, relatively few of us, actually, 22 people slept out at City Hall, and only, I think now the number I've counted is 9 of us who got citations. And we didn't get citations for sleeping, and perhaps that's because they knew that citations for sleeping, for at least for homeless people, would be dismissed if people were on waiting lists. And they didn't want to, they might not have felt that would be a deterrent, or maybe they, who knows what their motivation was. We got citations for being at City Hall after 10 o'clock, which is their closing hours. Now, in the past, it has been judges have refused to allow the city and the mayor to close down City Hall at night because it's the seat of government and it is a place where people have a right to come and protest, petition, speak out for a redress of grievances, even at late at night. I mean, some people's schedules only allow them to come late at night. Some issues are, like the sleeping ban, most poignantly and effectively raised late at night. So when Mayor Rotkin tried to get the court to ban a protest that was happening at night, run by Dan Hopkins, called the City Hall Sleepers Vigil, Stephen Siegel, actually it wasn't Stephen Siegel, it was Samuel Stevens, the judge there said, no, sir, we can't ban the protests at night at City Hall, though he did allow that if there was any criminal behavior at City Hall, it could be treated as a misdemeanor violation of an injunction not to violate the law there. And one of the big talking points and bellowing points of Kennedy and Rotkin, who were the politicians in power in those days, 20 years ago nearly now, was that people were going pooing and peeing. Of course, they kept the bathrooms closed. And that they were harassing the staff, though no one was ever arrested for harassing the staff or cited. This was the story that flooded the papers and that they tried to bring to the court. And that also people were criminally sleeping and serving food there. And that was not allowed by the judge. So in a sneak maneuver, Danette Shoemaker and her allies on the city council passed an ordinance 10 years ago that allowed her, without going to either the Parks and Rec Commission except to tell them it was happening, but not to consult with them or at least to require their permission or anything, or to require city council's vote, she could close any area of the city for however long she wanted, simply on her own edict as an administrative action. And she's done that. She did it It was done in various parks, actually, before she got that rule, and it was done, through, I think, through the more, probably done through a legislative process, so I'm not sure. But she closed City Hall in 2010, and it's been essentially closed at night ever since. I don't mean the buildings. I mean the grounds. I mean the areas where the agendas are posted. So if you want to go read the agenda, which is supposed to be accessible to the community of these various bodies that the City Council claims represent the people and that the public has a right to go to, and to know what's going on in, you can't go there for at least half of the 72-hour period before the meeting happens, because that period will lie between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., and therefore it'll be illegal for you to be there. So the entire process is unconstitutional just from that minor point alone, but the major point is that If you heard in other countries that and there was no rioting or anything, just peaceful protests, they decided they would not allow you to come to City Hall at night because they were afraid it would be, didn't even justify it, they just said you can't do it. This would be regarded as some form of abusive, repressive behavior. Not in Santa Cruz. So we're going to be challenging that. We challenged it 2 weeks ago, and we're challenging it again this Sunday night. We're inviting folks to come join us. You don't have to be willing to be arrested or to take a ticket. We want observers. We want people to keep an eye on what's going on. We are inviting homeless people to come and sleep with us if they want. They may be vulnerable. They may face sleeping tickets. But homeless people, ironically, have more protection than housed people in terms of legal protection, theoretically, if they have the stamina to go to court, or to go to the homeless lack of services center, what remains of their services there, all the day meals, day locker, there's actually no, there haven't been any lockers there for years, the day laundry, the bathroom 24 hours a day, all that's closed off to people who want to walk in, any homeless person. And of course you've had now to walk through these gates with the ID card around your neck, and that's been one of the repressive, some people called it concentration camp-like aspects to the homeless lack of services center that's been on the books and in reality on the ground for about a year. But now you are faced with a situation where you can't use a lot of these services, and you can't. The waiting list for the Pauley Loft is closed, but the River Street Shelter list is reportedly still open. We're still trying to gather more information on that. And we encourage people to sign up for these waiting lists in order to protect yourself, because if you're on the waiting list, when the police issue you a citation, that citation, according to the letter of the law, shall be dismissed. And in fact, in the studio with us, we have an expert on that subject, a very medical meditation man, Michael O, who's maybe able to find his way to the mic. Can Mike find the mic? It's over there. Mike, I've harassed you repeatedly to get specifics on the River Street Shelter. I didn't even ask you before the show started if you have. You got anything new since you last told me that you had to be either referred by Dominican or by the Homeless Persons Health Project to get on the waiting list?
Well, I was referred by the HPHP clinic. That's how I got in there. And so one of the staff members told me they also accept people from hospital directly if they're coming out from hospital. Thirdly, I believe anyone can go there and say, I'd like to be on the waiting list, and they'll give you a phone number, and they'll tell you, well, you've got to call in or come in twice a week. Either, I believe the days are Tuesday and Thursday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or there any time after that. If you fail to make a phone call or come in on those days, even if you miss one day, you'll be dropped from the waiting list.
You're telling me that you can actually get on the waiting list if you're able to get past the locked gate,
right?
And but you can't call in to get on the waiting list, I take it.
No, you have to go in there. You have to get past the gate, and a friend of mine did that recently. He somehow got past the gate, and he went in and got his name there, and he was told to call twice a week or come in twice a week.
And when did that happen?
Last week.
Hmm. Well, and that kind of confirms what I've heard from other activists who've contacted them. I think Rabbi Phil Posner, who was also ticketed last week for being part of the sleep out, as I was, and so were seven others, he contacted the someone there named Stephen at the River Street Shelter, who told him that not only could people, anybody sign up who wanted to, but that anyone who, he encouraged people to sign up because their tickets would be dismissed. So at least that's his understanding. I've really had a hard time getting confirmation in a verifiable way that the people on the Pauli waiting list, the Pauli Loft waiting list, and the River Street Shelter waiting lists are actually getting their tickets dismissed. I'm not saying they aren't. I don't recall cases where people say that they're on the list, maybe one or two, and that they weren't dismissed. But most people who get these tickets just throw them away, or you know, use them for toilet paper. Some of them collect them at my request, so we can, you know, take them to court. We had a project going, you may remember, all you long-suffering, long-time listeners, some months ago when I encouraged people to file claims against the city for sleep deprivation and taking it to small claims court. We haven't done that yet. They have filed the claims. We have gotten the rejection of the claims. We have gotten no further in that. My only excuse for that one, and it isn't a very good one, or perhaps it is, I don't know, is we're working on other things at the moment. And the person power and the legal focus needed to effectively take cases into small claims court in Watsonville has not yet been amassed. We don't need a lot of lawyer stuff, but we need to actually focus on the issue and do it. And it is a project which we're hoping, you know, at some point, will come to some kind of consummation. Right now, we're doing direct action in terms of educating the public around the sleeping ban through these sleepouts. And there's also talk of a daytime sleepout that will be happening at City Hall beginning, I think, tomorrow. Although I myself am not a frontline part of that. I was just informed of it. We'll see if that happens. And then throughout the next week, there are some activists who are themselves homeless who feel that it's time to get going and at least spend part of the afternoon on the lawn at City Hall, and we'll see if that happens. And if that does, that's really good news. Well, so I'm going to get a little musical with you now, and then maybe we'll play some interviews. But hopefully someone out there has something they want to say about it, something of any of this that you've been listening to. And the phone number is 427-3772. 427-3772. So give me a call if you have some thoughts.
I'm young, just in my teens. I make toys here in Thailand. The pig lady and the big ears mouse. You think this is fairyland, but the bosses are in your face. They push and yell all day. They need more toys somewhere far away. You can't live on what they pay. But we will have dignity, tear down this misery. The world will hear our song, we're growing strong. One Monday afternoon, there were screams in the factory. The whole building consumed by flames. Doors locked for security. in that cruel cheap fire trap. 200 workers died. The broken toys and broken people strewn all over side by side. But we will have dignity. Tear down this misery. The world will hear our song. We're growing strong. And we're fighting back. Petitions and boycotts will carry us through. They'll all know this world is our world too. Across the seas, a land where the dolls find a family and the children get to go to school. They don't work in a factory. There are unions that struggle for better pay and safety. We'll never rest until the day all people live in dignity. We will have dignity. Tear down this misery. The world will hear our song. We're growing strong.
In Honduras.
We're growing strong.
Haiti.
We're growing strong.
Ghana.
We're growing strong.
That's another one from the little-known Ray Corona Band. Working People's Music Tape. A little bit off-key here and there, perhaps, but hey, go with it. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. Phone number here is 427-3772. You outside, or your friends are outside, what do you think of this sleeping band craziness? Planning to come perhaps on Sunday night to be a part of it? Maybe you oppose it. Maybe you think it's a bad idea. Well, let's hear from you, too. Let's hear what your thoughts are on this. Call in 427-3772, and we'll talk. So another issue that's come up has been the Santa Cruz 11. You may have heard about them. I used to talk about them a lot, particularly when I was a member of the Santa Cruz 11. There's a final four activists who were dragged mercilessly through the courts, essentially for being in a vacant building as part of a peaceful protest. Vacant building run by one of the primary bankster criminals in the country, Wells Fargo. And Wells Fargo, of course, continues its crime spree, as do the other banks, with the collusion of the federal government and the local government, and they don't get held to account, but those who attempt to hold them to account suffer not some severe penalties, not actually the people who planned the action, not the people who may have graffitied the building or taken a dump in the back when they shut off the water or broken a couple of sticks of the furniture, but rather reporters and community activists who are peaceful, who happen to be there, who the police decided they could identify, even though they couldn't claim that they did any vandalism or broke in or conspired in any way. They were using a rather attenuated legalistic trickery called aiding and abetting, which claims that if you have committed any illegal act, let's say trespass, because if you're in a bank after they give you a trespass warning, and even though this is a vacant building that is just leased by a bank and had been vacant for years before and was vacant and still is vacant years after, if you're given a warning to leave, then you're guilty of trespass if you don't leave. And then if other people commit crimes, then you are guilty of that by aiding and abetting. So I suppose if somebody got shot in there, they would be calling these people murderers. I mean, it's complete bullshit. And it wouldn't fly even in a, you know, a college bull session. However, it flies in our court system because the courts are a tightly regulated series of rackets run by highly paid professionals called attorneys and judges and backed by a lethal police force and a whole system of traditions which somehow makes people respect this whole system far more than it should be respected. In any case, you can read the outcome of the final four. Seven of the Santa Cruz 11 had their cases eventually dismissed after a year of fighting, thousands of dollars. Well, for the public, it was at least $100,000 in expenses, coming to court, paying the attorneys, taking up the court time, delaying other really more serious cases involving assault and rape and murder and things of that sort, diverting resources in order to make a political point. And essentially to repress the Occupy movement, which came out strongly in 2011 and then sort of evaporated soon after, unfortunately, although it's had some positive consequences in different cities here as well, even. Not as positive as I'd liked, but some positive consequences. If you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, you will find a story, a rather lengthy story, by Alex DeRosi with lots of photos. Case closed. It's called actually Resolution Reached for 75 River Street Occupation Defendants. And then there's another commentary called Case Closed, A Certain Kind of Resolution. And there's still some controversy about the defendants having taken the final deal. These defendants were going to court year after year, month after month, week after week, to deal with not just phony charges, but these are people who are poor, who can't afford to get there. One of them is from far out of town, San Francisco. Others are homeless, and they had to do this. They were facing up to 4 years in prison. Felony vandalism was the charge that they faced. So it was ended, and I did some interviewing of one of the defendants, Gabriella Ripley Phipps. While I was there, I went there in solidarity on Tuesday when the hearing happened. I wasn't there when the final decision was made by several of the defendants three of the defendants consulted. I think maybe the fourth was not around, but they under great pressure, both from the actual prosecution and from their friends, because they had a lot of support. I was very surprised, because this court hearing came with 2 days' notice for us, and it was actually 12 hours' notice for me. I didn't learn about it until Monday evening, when I was requested. I put out a mention of it on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list. But there wasn't much notice, and when I got there, there were 40 people there. The whole courtroom was packed, and it was there was this kind of warm, vibrant, supportive atmosphere. But I think it also helped to pressure defendants into finally saying, all right, we give up. And they didn't plead guilty, but they pleaded no contest, which is the same thing, except it, supposedly frees you from legal liability. Or I'm not sure exactly how that works these days. But it made me think way back to when I began this case. I was informed that I was about to be arrested back in February of 2012. That's 3.5 years ago. And so I went down to the court and immediately signed a promise to appear, which stopped the arrest, although others were not so lucky. Becky Johnson was dragged out of her home. That's a bit dramatic, but she was handcuffed and taken from her home while cooking. I don't know if she's cooking pancakes, I think, some such thing, and by the deputies, because she lived right outside the city. Others were also arrested and held, and it might have been best at that time to demand speedy trial on the charges. But they were serious charges. At that time, we all faced 7 years in prison, two felonies and two misdemeanors each. And again, the crime was nothing that they could actually point to what we had done, other than the claim, which couldn't be substantiated in the case of seven of us, that we were in a building owned by a major banker criminal, the Wells Fargo Bank, after a trespass warning was given in a peaceful protest, in actions similar to what was happening all around the country against these kinds of criminal agencies. The people themselves were taking action where the authorities were failing to do so. And I went inside and reported on it. So did Alex DeRosi and Bradley Stewart and Bradley Allen. So did Brent Adams. So did Becky Johnson. She actually didn't go inside. She sat outside, but she was still falsely accused by Officer Winston of going inside. And we were all dragged into court for a dozen appearances at least. Now it's been a total, I think, of 54 court hearings for the final four defendants. It's just, I mean, it's an incredible waste of time, a very arcane and elaborate waste of time. So it would have been best to say, okay, give us a trial now. Prove that you have some indication of criminal behavior. But we were scared. We were scared, and that's probably what the current defendants thought 2 days ago. I mean, they were exhausted, they were scared, and their friends were tired, too. Their friends keep coming to all these court hearings. I didn't talk to them. I didn't interview them in that regard. And, you know, it's possible the defendants could have gotten a better deal if they'd said, no, we're not. We are going to go to trial. You have to spend $100,000. The trial is going to take 3 to 6 weeks. And it's going to make you look like a bunch of idiots, because what do you got? You have us breaking windows, you know, graffitiing the walls. Do you have anything like that? The answer is no. You have nothing of that kind. You have us in the building, period. You know, if, and maybe not even that, along with 100 other people, including Councilwoman Catherine Byers, who was in the building at one time. So, I mean, it's such a trumped-up situation. It's a black mark that will forever scar what little remains of the reputation of former DA Bob Lee, who died of cancer earlier this year, I guess it was, or late last year, I'm not sure which. Anyway, let's hear a little bit of the interviews from that hearing, although, again, at that time of these interviews, the defendant, who is Gabriella Ripley Phipps, was not interested in pleading out. She changed her mind and did, as did, I believe, Brent Adams and Angel Alcantara. And I wonder how much of the pressure came from the attorneys, too. I don't know. I just know that this was another one of those, you know, drag him into court quickly and threaten him some more and see if you can frighten him. And this time it worked. And all I can say is, she asked, Gabriella actually asked me what she thought she should do. And I said, you know, I can't tell you because, shit, I mean, if I don't know what the outcome's going to be. And I know that you've suffered a lot from all this. So you have to make that decision herself. And she did. Let's hear some of the interview, though, and see what happened in that way back then and when and where and so forth.
Waiting for the half hour, which is lengthened into an hour or so. Gabriella, would you like to make a comment about this excitement of waiting in the hallway for the return of Judge Siegel? You're shaking your head. Is this on the advice of your attorney? Break into song.
I feel excited and scared.
What do you think about the crowd showing up?
I feel really happy about how many folks are here. So many people I know from different places in my life, and so many people that were available to come at last minute's notice.
I've heard a rumor that you have gotten an offer from for a settlement. Are you prepared to? Is still sort of sub rosa, that settlement, or is it, so to speak, under wraps?
I don't believe so. What has been offered to us by the district attorney's office is 3 years, like, informal probation.
was on the web this morning.
And have you come to any decision yet?
I am not going to accept the offer.
And, you know, I guess the only other defendant here is Brent Adams. Angel Alcantara was contacted by his attorney, Jesse Rubin. Finally, apparently, Rubin himself is out of town and wasn't informed of this. And I guess Alexis Briggs in Amsterdam?
I believe so.
She's the attorney for the fourth defendant, Cameron Orville.
Who's not here either.
And so, what are your predictions about the district attorney? If you wish to say anything, I'll remind you, you initially began this conversation by saying you didn't want to talk. I then lured you into a chitter-chatter, as I often do.
Yeah.
Don't feel obliged to say anything.
Okay.
What do they say? Loose lips sink defendants.
Yeah.
Or possibly spread the word to the community. You have to make a decision. So I know a year ago, we all went. We paraded around with Bob Lee masks. I think it was. It was it a year ago or was it?
Probably a year ago.
Now, are we going to have Jeff Rozelle masks too? Or?
Well, we can do that. Yeah.
This kind of was a surprise hearing. When did you hear about it?
Sunday afternoon evening.
Today is Tuesday, so it wasn't much time. And
yeah, I'm about 48 hours.
How can they hold a hearing without Alexis Briggs being here? And how can you reach a settlement without at least all four defendants being here?
I don't know why or how exactly this hearing or this conversation was set up and why I chose to do it before. I mean, I'm discussing that set up now to put some space between now and the trial, so we can make some hearing out before the trial.
What is the trial slated for in the moment?
Jury selection is slated to start on the 27th.
Which is about 2 weeks away, more or less.
More or less. Correct.
And the, I think you told me earlier, you confirmed it was a, what, 3 to 6 week trial?
There was an estimation by attorneys earlier that it would be a 6 week trial. I think that that's. I think it will not be 6 weeks, and I can easily see it being 3 to 4.
I understand that costs tens, if not more, tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, to do such a trial for the state, the county alone.
Correct.
And what they squeeze out of you would be, right now, it's they're offering you an $8,000 settlement.
Correct, and that money doesn't even go to the state.
And maybe you should offer, if they pay you $75,000, you'll avoid the trial.
Yeah.
Cheaper for the county.
Probably.
You know, and then you could go invest your money in Wells Fargo Bank, and everybody would be happy.
No, thank you. I bank with the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union.
How are they spending your money?
They give it out to small businesses. And
you know that? Have you researched them?
No, I have not. I believe the things that they say. Maybe that.
Yeah, I mean, it's
history tells me not to believe.
Right. Always check the register to see what's really going on. We have two attorneys here. There's Lisa, what's Lisa's last name?
McKamey.
And he's taking Brent Adams, who's probably the most formally dressed man in the crowd, except for the attorneys. He's wearing a sports coat. Brent has become a controversial figure. But he's still here, and there are people supporting him. As we all wait in the hallway.
And as you will find if you go to Santa Cruz Indy Media and the Alex DeRosi story that I mentioned, you will find after years in court, case closes for three of the Santa Cruz 11. And in front of Judge Siegel in the Santa Cruz courtroom on Tuesday, Gabriella Ripley Phipps and Brent Adams, through his attorney, entered pleas of no contest to a charge of misdemeanor trespass. So the two felonies and the two misdemeanor charges, or maybe it was down to one felony and one misdemeanor charge, was reduced to a misdemeanor trespass. And they waived time. Let's see here. Trying to get a clearer look at this. the waive time for sentencing and resentence to, instead of the $2,000 in restitution fees per defendant to Wells Fargo, it was back to $1,500. Originally, they were asking for a total of $27,000 or $29,000 from all of us, and there were 11 of us then. So that would have been, oh, I don't know, between $2,000 and $2,500 apiece, which almost no one could pay. So the restitution fees were dropped. Pay $220 in court fees. This is the final resolution for Gabriella and Brent, minus any credits for time served. So Gabriella was actually falsely arrested several days later. On a chart, she was helping homeless people remove their backpacks and their property from the mass police raid on the San Lorenzo Park campground that was next to the Occupy area. And they were arrested and dragged off and held on $25,000 bail, a number of them. And the next day, all charges were dropped. So she got credit for the time served in that, I guess it was a day or two in jail. She has to serve 100. She and Brent have to serve 100 hours of community service with any nonprofit community organization without having to report to or through the community options office, which I think is a plus. Community options is a mercenary might be a little harsh, but maybe it won't be a little harsh. It's you have to pay to do community service. Depending on how many hours you have, they charge you for their administrative activities. Anywhere between $25 and $100 or $200. And for those who chose community service because they don't have any money, it is counterproductive and ridiculous. It may lead to them not being able to do their community service, having to go back to court and go to jail. So if you can do your community service without going through community options, that's better. And so they were able to get that. They have to agree to stay away from 75 River Street. That's the location of the still-vacant Wells Fargo Bank, where plenty of homeless people sleep at night, at least outside the bank. I don't know if any have gone inside, perhaps some have. And as I said, it isn't really a bank. It's a leased building. It used to be a bank. It was Coast Commercial Bank before it closed in 2007 or something. And then Wells Fargo leased it from its... Wells Fargo has an active bank across the street. But this building simply has been vacant, and so it was a target for some Occupy activists, an autonomous group that came out of Occupy, and held the bank for 3 days and tried to establish a community center, not with a lot of success. But frankly, I applaud the effort. And a lot of people denounced it as counterproductive because at the same time, authorities moved on the homeless campground across the river and reduced the footprint of the campground by, I think, two-thirds, cramming everybody together. And then also, shortly thereafter, going after the Occupy structures in front of the county building that had been there for 2 months, the Occutent, as they called it, and the various tents around the main Occutent, which, maybe it's called the Octagon. In any case, it was the central structure. And the focus on the 75 River Street either enraged the police and deputies into acting or diverted attention to the activists or divided the activists, some of whom thought this wasn't such a hot idea, taking over the bank, the vacant bank structure, in hopes of getting a community center or a homeless shelter or protests against Wells Fargo. Depends on who you talk to, what the clear purpose was. There actually is a website that was set up people can go to look at what the people who claim to represent the occupiers of the bank felt was their purpose. I don't have that. I think if you look up... I don't have that information right now as to where it is, but I've seen it. And I could find it again. And the felony vandalism charge was dropped. So, my sympathies to the remaining defendants and my continued condemnation to the authorities who pulled this shit and the rest of us in the community who fell for it and pulled in our horns and dug in and took to our heels rather than digging in our heels around what we had to do to stand up to this stuff. And it's always an issue. How do you deal with the police? How do you deal with the prosecution? This was a strange one because in almost every other protest I've ever been in, in fact, it's true in every other protest I've been in, where there have been arrests or tickets, it happened at the time of the protest. These charges came down 2 months later. You might think, oh, well, they had to investigate. No, they didn't. They could have walked into the bank and arrested people at any point, and they could have actually gotten the people that they claimed they were after, the felony vandals, or have been more likely to get those people. They didn't. Instead, this was used as a pretext to go after activists who were thorns in the side of the authorities, myself, Becky Johnson, the two Indy Bay journalists, Brent Adams, and others. And also, it was a token effort. They threw it all at one prosecutor who didn't know what she was doing. Her name was Rebecca Young. She kept making so many mistakes, she became the only prosecutor I've ever heard of in this county who was censured by the judge for withholding discovery again and again. That means withholding information from the defense. Anyway, it's a sad story, and... let's hear some more from the courtroom. Again, this is about probably a different case, and that would be actually a relief.
So, sort of on a side note, I'm outside the doors of Alliance One, which is a place you go to deal with tickets that have gone to collection. And the phone number is 877-541-8420, Monday through Friday. Office hours are apparently 8 to 4, except during the noon hour, 12 to 1, closed for lunch. And I know very little about Alliance One, except what I've heard vaguely from Steve Plaich, which is that it is a place you go after... you have failed to go to court and deal with your citations, and they are then sent them off to collection, and then I believe Alliance One deals with them. Again, I'm not...
And the significance of Alliance One is that many homeless people these days simply don't have... they choose not to try to deal with the many, many tickets that they get for being in a park after dark, closed area, things of that sort, smoking. And so the tickets do go to collection. So Alliance One is the only option they have for restoring their credit, sometimes clearing a driver's license, dealing with child support conditions that somehow are also... I think child support can be affected by unpaid citations, even phony, cooked-up, class-based, get-the-poor-out-of-town citations that have no constitutional basis. So I'm going to take a brief musical break. I'll be right back. I want to remind you, you can get in touch here. You can let me know what you think about the disposition of the Santa Cruz 11. You can let me know, any peripheral issues around the sleeping ban, the upcoming protest, and... let the community know. We can talk about it. 427-3772.
Sexual harassment, I'm calling the law. Broadcaster who is got something to advise us about his upcoming show. Hey there.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm choking on a piece of sourdough bread.
No, finish chewing your bread and then we can continue the discussion. It's always important to chew your food thoroughly. You know?
Yeah, that's what I get for trying to jam my pre-dinner snack in. Hi, Robert. Thank you very much.
Sure.
My name is Ren Tawil, and I'm the host of the two times a week program, Mideast Migraines, on Monday, 3 p.m., and Saturday, 11 a.m., on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And, again, thank you, Robert, for allowing me to do a little plug here.
Go ahead.
I'm in the process of trying to give a kick in the ass to the 9/11 Truth Movement activity here in Santa Cruz County and in places far-flung. I'm currently reading on air on my Saturday edition at 11 a.m., including this coming Saturday, a book by a gentleman named Christopher Bolin. His work is called Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World. Now, actually, I'm about halfway through the book, and I've already put out a number of promotions for the reading of the book over the air, you know, chapter by chapter. And I've been doing this with, some half dozen books already under my belt over the course of the last 18 months or so. And, the thing is, this author, Chris Bolin, has been following and working on the, all the personalities and the deceptions involved in the 9/11 attack, September 11, 2001, since it occurred. He was actually up in that part of the country in the Northeast Corridor there with his family when it occurred. And he's been staying on top of it. He released this book about 3 years ago. And now, starting in 2 days, Saturday, at the 11 a.m. Pacific time edition of Mideast Migraines on Free Radio Santa Cruz, I'll be beginning the chapter entitled The Media Cover-Up, specifically The Media Cover-Up, referring to the coverage of 9/11 and who supposedly was really responsible for the attacks. And I just want to take advantage of your airtime here to promote that to anyone, whether you're homeless or not, who may be interested or be perhaps not so interested in the subject matter, to listen in and to call into the program at any point, if you will. It's a two-hour program beginning at 11 a.m. I'm going to be reading from the chapter, The Media Cover-Up Involving 9/11.
So, Ren, Is this book available online? Can people themselves know if they miss your reading? Can they pick up and read it elsewhere? What do you suggest?
They can always try Amazon or their favorite bookstore. Again, it's simply entitled the title of the book is Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World. It's written by Christopher Bolin, B-O-L-L-Y-N. You can go to his own website, www.bolin.com, if you want your own copy of the book.
I mean, has he? He isn't providing this as a public service. I assume he wants to make money, right?
Well, he certainly wants to cover his own ass, money wise.
Yeah.
You know, this is a truly dedicated individual. He gave a presentation a few months ago in Santa Cruz at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, as many can well imagine it would be at, and it was an excellent presentation. I can vouch for the man's presence of mind. And to some degree, I can vouch for his resources and his sincerity. For one thing, he happens to be a graduate of the University of California at Santa Cruz, even though he hails from Schaumburg, Illinois, and he has his degree in Middle Eastern affairs and is certainly very versed in that subject matter, and he is, just in case anyone out there happens to be wondering, he is absolutely not anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hate Jews, but he does have some very interesting things to say about Mossad, which is Israel's espionage agency, and their attachments to the 9/11 attacks.
Well, I guess folks can both tune in to the show at 11 a.m. on Saturday on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And also, my suggestion, I rarely read books. I read one book, I guess. I read Reefer Madness, the very articulate book on the whole drug war scam some years ago. I think I may have played the audio of the whole book. It's easier than that way, and they got better readers than me.
That's not the script of the original film, is it?
No. This is I think the original film, of course, was a you know,
more of
became
a farce.
Became a cult classic as a farce, right? But no, this was a book that was actually documented. Yeah, the criminalization and what was behind it. I mean, there's been a lot of books written about that. But what I'm saying is, I'm thinking now that one thing, Pete, you might want to consider doing if you find the information that this guy has, and I don't vouch for him or and I don't condemn him, is accurate and something you think should be spread, is summarize it in a brief form and put it out in a way that can be posted and easily read. A lot of people won't listen to a long book. They won't listen. They won't read a long book. But if you can summarize what the arguments are and what the basic points of reference are and the basic authorities are, they might be more interested. Particularly, you know, 9/11 is. It's getting a little bit like the Kennedy assassination these days, although, you know, the Middle East is still very active, as we both know. That, however, is not the main topic of my show, so I'm going to leave it there, Ren, unless you want to conclude with something else.
I do not want this to turn into another JFK situation, which is now well over a half century old, and all these people who were truly responsible for that assassination have clearly gotten scot-free away. It's compared to JFK, this is happened only 15 years ago, and I don't really want it to get much longer past this without some real action and the truth getting out. So again, Robert, thank you for the airtime, and I really obviously I want to take advantage of my own radio station's adjuncts to getting the word out. Listen, sure. This Saturday to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 11 a.m., and I'll talk to you about media complicity in the cover-up of what really happened in 9/11.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Of course, there's ongoing assassinations that are happening every day. Compliments of Obama and other, just take a look at the Egyptian rulers. Or, you know, I mean, we can talk about the assassinations in Cleveland. And that's something, actually, I was about to mention before I got on to this subject. I noticed this a couple days ago. You may have noticed it, too. I think it was on Democracy Now!, perhaps. In the infamous Tamir Rice case, eight activists and clergy members who call themselves the Cleveland Eight released a video and letter Wednesday echoing earlier grievances with the investigation and the police shooting of 12-year-old Tamar Rice. The group filed citizen affidavits June 9th calling for charges to be filed against Cleveland police officers Timothy Lohman and Frank Garmback for their respective roles in the November 12, 2014 shooting outside the Qdale Recreation Center. Cleveland Municipal Judge Ronald Adrian found probable cause to charge the officers with murder. Quote, the actions by chief law enforcement officers in the city of Cleveland and Cuyahoga County are clear examples of abuse of discretion and the unequal administration of law that breeds distrust in the criminal justice system, the statement by the attorneys released Wednesday said. Cayuga County Prosecutor Timothy J. McGinty said in late June that his office will complete his investigation. This is the case of the cops who showed up and shot this 12-year-old kid within 2 minutes after, no, 2 seconds after arriving. And, you know, it was called murder. But, of course, that was months ago. There's nothing, you know, nothing has been done. Well, according to this, the prosecutor McGinty wants... He claimed that he needs additional investigation time before his office could present the case to a grand jury. Even though it's on video, I'm not quite sure what investigation, which is how many ways out can he find. You know, I mean, I'll play a little bit of the attorney's statement on this. The Cleveland aide is angered that a grand jury is being utilized to find probable cause to charge and indict the officers. They believe McGinty's office already has ample evidence. You don't need a grand jury to file charges of murder. The DA can do it in most states. It can do it in California. And apparently, according to the Cleveland aide, they can do it in Ohio as well. The evidence is a video surveillance of the shooting, the Cayuga County Sheriff's Department's detailed report of the incident, and Judge Adrien's finding of probable cause. And let's hear a little bit from these folks. Here's a little bit of the audio portion of a video that's on YouTube, again, under the Cleveland 8 letter. Video echoes grievances against McGinty and Tamar Rice investigation.
Criminal justice system cannot solely focus on transforming law enforcement. It must also ensure that procedural justice, the fair evaluation and administration of legal procedures, the decision-making process, and the quality of treatment is upheld to avoid both the appearance and the existence of partiality.
On Tuesday, June 9th, we, a group of activists
Dr. Rhonda Williams.
Here in the city of Cleveland, in accordance with the Ohio Revised Code, filed citizen affidavits calling for the charging and arrest of two officers in the death of 12-year-old Tamar Rice.
In a letter dated June 18th,
Rachel
we called
Smith.
Upon the Cleveland Law Department to uphold the law and Judge Ronald Adrian's findings of probable cause by issuing warrants for the arrests of officers Frank Garmback and Timothy Lohman.
The City of Cleveland Law Director Barbara Langhenry and Cuyahoga County Prosecutor Timothy McGinty have said that they support reform. Yet their inaction on this issue sends a signal to the people that they are not upholding the very laws they want the people to respect.
Following the probable
Julia
cause findings,
Shearson.
The county prosecutor continues to state that he will bring the matter before a grand jury and leave it to them to decide whether there is enough evidence against these officers to bring indictments.
The actions by chief law enforcement officials in the city of Cleveland and Cuyahoga County are clear examples of abuse of discretion and the unequal administration of law that breeds distrust in our criminal justice system.
First, the decision not to issue warrants for the arrest exhibits an arbitrary and selective application of the law.
By ignoring the law, the state is acting contrary to the interests of the people.
While Judge Adrian's findings were not acted upon with regard to arrest warrants for Garmback and Lohman, his and other judges' considerations is regularly sought and acted upon against private citizens, as we see with search warrants. This is unacceptable.
Second, the county prosecutor's approach of using the grand jury as a forum to determine whether charges will be filed in the Tamar Rice case is not only another example of disregard for the judiciary, but also an unequal application of the grand jury process.
We are not trying to circumvent the grand jury process for Garmback and Lohman. However, a step is being bypassed.
It is not the grand jury's role to file the initial charges. For the vast majority of people, charges have already been filed against them prior to a prosecutor seeking an indictment before the grand jury.
when the prosecutor uses the grand jury as a body to determine probable cause for charging and indicting, it is problematic in two ways. First, it gives police officers the opportunity to provide exculpatory, exonerating testimony without cross-examination, as took place in the Michael Brown case in Ferguson and the Eric Garner case in Staten Island. This approach suggests a secret trial out of public view, which, while serving the interests of the officers, does not serve the interests of justice.
Two, the idea that rules of the grand jury can be altered at will, depending on who is suspected of committing a crime, is itself unconstitutional and discriminatory against every other individual subject to the grand jury, but without the apparent entitlements that come with wearing a badge.
Thirdly, the fact that the county prosecutor has stated he needs to conduct his own investigation raises the question of what else is required to file charges and whether he deems police officers as a special class, exempt from being subject to normal criminal procedures.
Here is the evidence the county prosecutor already has in his possession.
First, a video of Tamir Rice being killed at close range in less than 2 seconds and being left for more than 4 minutes without any first aid.
Two, a detailed report by the Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Department resulting from a 5-month investigation.
A finding of probable cause by a respected judge of the Cleveland Municipal Court with more than 30 years on the bench.
The county prosecutor may have his own rationale for proceeding in this manner.
However, regardless of his reasons, none would truly seem fair or equitable, considering that the ordinary resident or citizen is not granted such deference.
If we, as a community and a nation, are going to truly transform our criminal justice system, the public must see the system as legitimate and trust that elected and appointed officials will abide by the law and apply it equally throughout the legal process.
This goes not only for police officers,
but also for judges, law directors,
and prosecutors.
We the people should not
and must not
stand for anything less.
And that's a letter from the members of the Cleveland Eight, who are a variety of individuals, white and black, male and female, who are standing up to and denouncing the processes of injustice being pursued to essentially cover up and apparently, well, that are certainly not bringing the killers of Tamir Rice to justice in Cleveland, Ohio. Closer to home, for those of you who do follow Indie Media, our local Santa Cruz Indie Media section of Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz IMC, there is another story. Funeral expenses for sweet 17-year-old boy is a story. It's actually an attempt to get funding for the family of Cyrus Avencio Hurtado, who's a Boulder Creek guy, 17-year-old who moved in with his grandparents in Boulder Creek, according to the story, after several years of living in Nevada with his mother, shot and killed by Santa Cruz County Sheriff's deputies last week. He had started school at San Lorenzo Valley High School in April. Quote, he was one of the most compassionate, sensitive, and loving, caring human beings you could ever know. Memorial services are going to be happening. It's not clear when. There's an earlier story by Alex DeRosi, I believe. Maybe, I think he mentioned it to me. As I'm not sure if it's on here. Perhaps not. Let me double check. Spinning down. There was a story in the Sentinel about this shooting, and I'm looking. I thought I saw one online for on this story, but I don't see it. Maybe I do. Here it is. Donations sought for family of 17-year-old killed by Santa Cruz sheriffs. Apparently this guy was, the 17-year-old had a rifle in his hand. Here's the sheriff's report. According to sheriff's
department's press release, deputies were dispatched to the Boulder Creek home on Fern Avenue at 10:33 p.m. when Hurtado's grandparents called 911 to report the teenager had physically struck his grandfather. Deputies say when they arrived, they were told by his grandparents that Hurtado had just killed a family pet and was inside of their house where he had access to guns. Eight deputies with the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department would eventually arrive. According to reports, a perimeter was established around the home and fire and ambulance services were staged nearby. According to the press release, Hurtado was shot and killed just after 11:16 p.m. when he emerged from the house holding a Winchester rifle. Two deputies shot Hurtado four times. The boy died on the operating table in a regional trauma center at 4:22 a.m. on July 10th. A teenager had been placed on a mental health hold, according to the sheriffs, after a 2013 incident in the same home of his grandparents. A person claiming to be a friend of the family stated online Hurtado was taking prescription medications, but he appeared to be fine a few days before the shooting. Some comments that I've heard, and again, I have not researched this case deeply, that there were two weapons, a shotgun and a rifle involved. The rifle is a single-shot rifle. You have to cock it to shoot it. Yet he got four bullets in him, and of course the bullets were intended to kill him, not to disable him. That, of course, is, I believe that's the policy of the Santa Cruz Police Department. I couldn't cite the police general order that specifies that. But this is the practice in some other police agencies, and I think it's a vicious one. It sort of elevates the power of the police because this gives them sort of a routine license to kill. They don't have to wound, they don't have to disable, they kill as if they're going to shoot. And that is justified by saying it's a matter of officer safety, which, you know, doesn't pass the straight face test, actually, for me. I also want to find out what kind of weapons they're using. I sent an email to Chief Vogel the other day, because I had heard in the past, and I didn't know if it was true, I wanted to find out whether the Santa Cruz Police Department uses hollow-nose bullets. Those are dum-dum bullets that expand inside the body and cause greater damage. And they're outlawed under the, I think, the Hague Convention of the end of the last century. And I had heard some police departments do use these. And again, I don't want to accuse our police department of doing that. I simply asked the question of Kevin Vogel. He immediately replied, unusual, because he often simply forwards my requests to his records department, and they delay for a time, send me incomplete records after a longer time. And on repeated requests, I sometimes get enough information or some information such as I've requested. Sometimes I get full information, but often not. In this case, it was a simple question. Do you ever use dum-dum bullets or hollow-nosed bullets, hollow-tipped bullets? And he said, I prefer not to answer this question. He wrote me, I prefer instead to, you know, forward it to my Make a Public Records Act request. So I did, and we'll see how that goes. But the very answer and the immediacy of the answer seems strange to me. 427-3772 is a call-in number here. Let's take another one of those musical breaks, and I'll be back. 427-3772.
Like a paper clip, they scare you with correction fluid, replace you with a microchip. The day's too long and the pay's too small at the office. It's just plain wrong how they make people crawl at the office. Have you had enough neglect? How about a little respect? If you'll be strong, there'll be an overhaul at the office.
honest pay, or minimum wage for maximum day. If you work overtime without compensation, well, they take the profits and the vacation. They ride you like an elevator, they spin you like a swivel chair, they drop you in the out basket, stab you with an icy stare. The day's too long and the pay's too small at the office. It's just plain wrong how they make people crawl at the office. Have you had enough neglect? How about a little respect? If you'll be strong, there'll be an overhaul at the office. Easy to see, you're just being baited when they smile and say you're so liberated. Serving them coffee, fulfilling their wishes, you could have stayed home and done your own dishes. Slam you like a file drawer. They hang you on a balance sheet. Walk on you like the office floor. The day's too long and the pay's too small at the office. It's just plain wrong how they make people crawl at the office. Have you had enough neglect? How about a little respect? If you'll be strong, there'll be an overhaul at the office. Sound the gong and raise a battle call at the office. Before too long, those kings are gonna fall at the office. Sing this song and you can change it all at the office.
You can imagine that's the Office Song by the Ray Kamona Band, and you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. It's the closing half hour of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And again, 427-3772 is a call-in number. Let's get to a few street interviews and see what's being said out there. This is an interview from 3 days ago, on the 13th, so that would have been Monday. I'm probably thinking the Red Church or thereabouts, but let's take a listen.
So I'm talking with Dave. And Dave, you asked me if I know when the services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I like to call it, the shelter, are going to begin again. You've heard a lot of rumors floating around.
Yes.
And how has this affected you?
I never really I've wanted to eat. Mostly was my thing. I've never tried to get in the river or the loft or any of that kind of thing. I enjoyed being out. But my whole thing, basically, is that now that everybody's cast to the wind, so to speak, look out, Trader Joe's, CVS, everything, you know.
There'll be a large number of goods missing from those.
Yes, I'm sure of it. And I'm not a thief, but I'm sure that other people
are less perspicacious.
Yeah.
Or more daring, as the case may be.
Well, you got to eat somewhere, somehow. And a lot of them, you know, that don't run around tearing, hitting the churches and stuff for food, they're going to be in there taking stuff.
So, how long you been in town, Dave?
5 years.
And has much change in that time in your mind?
Not really.
What about,
I love this town. It's great.
How about how homeless people are treated?
I stay to a very limited crowd.
Have you gotten many tickets or citations for sleeping or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Dozens.
And have you gotten any stay-away orders recently?
2 days ago at Depot Park.
And for how long is the stay-away order you got?
24 hours, but that's already over.
Okay. And what was the cause? What kind of infraction did you...
Open the container.
Were you drunk and crazy, screaming and shouting?
No.
You just hadn't opened something?
I had one beer sitting there open.
Who was the officer or ranger who gave you the ticket?
What's your name, Chris?
Sandoval.
Sandoval or...
Romero,
one of the two.
And did they suggest a legal place where you could have an open container? I mean, as an adult, you know, you would think you might be allowed to...
No, they just told me to get out of the park. And the only reason I had stopped is because I saw a friend that I haven't seen in a while. And I normally will only stop at Depot Park if I'm on my way to the beach, you know. And I just happened to be coming this way, saw my friend, stopped to talk to her, and there they are right behind her.
I got you.
And I got snuck up on, which is pretty hard to do with me.
So have you been hassled for any of these tickets that you haven't? Or have you gone to court on the tickets, or have you just... So what do police do when they say, you have 433 tickets?
Now, I would imagine they're probably going to take me to jail.
But they haven't in 5 years?
No.
I mean, just like your hat. Seattle Seahawks.
Seahawks rule.
Any other thoughts or anything you want to say?
I think that everything, Food Not Bombs and you and all the people that help you, are doing a great job.
Oh, yeah? Well, thank you for helping me with the radio show. And we've been talking with...
Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Should be on some Thursday night. So we're talking with...
Animal.
And Animal, you've grown grayer over the years, man. What's this all about? Are you... maybe more tattoos, but maybe not.
Santa Cruz is a stressful community.
And what did you say? You went down to the shelter? It sounds like the beginning of a song or something.
It's a graveyard.
Tell me about it.
All the staff that were supposed to be laid off still have their jobs.
Oh, yeah. So what are they doing down there?
It's like a graveyard. It's dead.
So I understand they cut off the meals?
Mm-hmm. Everything's cut off.
Cut off the showers, unless you happen to be in a program.
Unless you're in a program, unless you're voted in.
And do you actually get voted in, or does just the staff vote you in?
I guess, from what I hear, the rumors I hear, the staff have to allow you in. It's their decision of who comes in.
Well, they know best, Animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't know anything except the paycheck.
Well,
all with the numbers.
Money, money, money. You got to have money to get money. Whoop-de-doo, and so forth.
It's all the paycheck says. It's all it is.
Anything you've seen changing in the scene around Santa Cruz, homeless-wise or outdoor-wise? Shaking your head.
Nothing changed.
Not better, not worse.
All the same.
Pretty much the same. Anything you want to add? Well, thank you, man.
Like, I don't even ask this community for anything. I don't. I don't panhandle. I don't spain. I don't ask for leftovers. I don't ask for shit.
Do they give you shit, so to speak?
They look down on me up again. Look down, look down their nose. Excuse me, you dropped your manners. You know, they stop and they look at me, and it's like... You know, you don't understand that?
It took me a moment, but I think I do. Thank you, Animal.
Yep.
So Animal tells me also that since Petey died, a woman who was hit by a car in the crosswalk, Highway 1 and Highway 9, he no longer goes to Coral Street. But then you did use the services there at one time? Meals, perhaps?
Yeah.
And what do you do now instead? Just cook
like at home, so to speak?
I try to hide at my camp as often as possible. I don't even like coming downtown.
You can give us the secret location if you wish.
It's in the Batcave.
Very well. Thank you again, Adam.
Later on. All right.
And that was actually an interview from Pacific Avenue from 3 days ago. So we're going to catch a few more of these and then make a discreet exit. I'm having a lot of trouble with equipment here in terms of being able to directly connect my iPod, so I'm kind of having to do makeshift arrangements, and I apologize to listeners. It also has been a difficult day for me because I came directly to the studio directly from Berkeley, and I wasn't able to make my usual splendid preparations. So this show is, well, more makeshift than I would have liked to have it, but that's how it is. Or at least that's how it is today. So let's hear some more. And again, you're always welcome to call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides.
on Pacific Avenue. It's about 3:30 on a Monday, pleasant Monday. You're in the shade. You have a Leftovers Rock sign. This is a piece of artwork we discussed before. We're talking with...
Craig Genty, otherwise known as Thor.
And Senor Thor, or Senor Genty, if you wish. We talked about this before, and you were told by a police officer or a host or somebody that this sign is... if you hold it after dark, it's a criminal behavior because they don't regard it as artwork. Is that correct?
Some officers agree it's art, some don't. I prefer the title Thor as my DBA for business.
Okay. And so, have you been able... You're still here, but of course it's not after dark.
Right.
And you are... You're in a red zone here.
I'm in a red zone. I don't know. It's not really a golden rectangle.
No, so, or a golden triangle.
Obviously, this is not a plot of Freemasonry. Because if it was a
shower.
Freemason plot, I would be in a golden rectangle.
We're going to have to work this out later, but...
This isn't even a rectangle. There's some red paint on a couple of corners, and I don't even see a remains of red paint.
They're going to tangle with you and wreck you if they can, I can tell you.
Really?
That. Well, you know, your kind of individual is colorful, but only briefly colorful.
Supporting Freemasonry?
Well, they got masonry all over the place here, man.
Yeah, but I don't want them to do it for free.
Well, there you are. It's capitalism in action. So have you got, has your sign brought you any income or interesting contact?
Actually, no, and I want to do an electronic music project called the Good Times Marijuana Band, and I'd like some of that music to be on your free radio.
Well, bring it in, and we'll give it a try. We'll see how it goes. You can also, of course, join anyone, for those listening, could join a free radio. You have to spend $30 a month to help with the rent, because that's
what I'm all right with the $30 a month. What I need is people to jam with. I want some electronic musicians, and I want to pay for some studio time. I want to get this project done, the title track, Good Times Marijuana Band. If you want to help promote marijuana in America to all people in need, please help.
I remember you were talking about that before, Thor. Now, do you have an email, Facebook, favorite corner, great? We don't have greats here in Santa Cruz. It ain't a great town.
Well, sorry. It is a great community.
It grates on you occasionally.
Well, no, it's a great community. Santa Cruz truly is. But we need to bring back the artsy-fartsy, and we need to put a huge gay bar right where those two Romanesque columns are down there.
That's next to the Rittenhouse building. I don't want you to say anything bad about the Rittenhouse. We don't call it the Schittenhouse, the Rittenhouse building for nothing.
I call it the Rittenhouse. I have respect for Ritten and the house.
I see. So it's Ritten, so let it be housed.
I think it should be a huge gay bar.
Well, okay.
Bring money into Santa Cruz.
Now, regarding your marijuana band, do you actually have any kind of a contact point where people can reach you if they're serious? Or
no,
not just making blabber here on the streets?
Waiting for people to smoke me out.
I see. Well, then we'll just leave it at that. We've been talking with
Thor.
Thank you, sir. And you, sir, any comments for free radio?
Not at the moment. Maybe on another day.
Maybe on another day.
I'm heterosexual. Just note that in there. But I am for a huge
and homophobic people. As well, perhaps?
No, I've danced for the Blue Lagoon as a exotic dancer.
But how many men have you kissed today?
I haven't kissed any men today.
Oh-ho! Homophobic, as I said. All right, then. We'll leave that one to go. Thank you, Thor. Bigoted pervert. All the police say, hold it. We're not going anywhere.
Another interview on Pacific Avenue afternoon, Monday afternoon it was, followed by this.
And with an accordion. In traditional German peasant garb. Thank you. here at the Red Church waiting for the services to begin because people aren't allowed to be outside during the services. And, John, you say you went to the city council to open up a pantry.
I was going to go to the city council to open up a pantry, but I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't. I can't get that. I can't get it zoned. I can't get an area to where I can get a, you know what I mean, my own little space to hand out clothes and a sandwich and a bag of chips.
Have you talked to Food Not Bombs people?
No, I haven't. I'm trying to go through Dawn Lane. I dealt with Dawn a few times. When I worked at the homeless shelter for about 4 years, me, him, and Stefan Nelson. So,
what happened to Stefan? I know he's kind of disappeared.
I have no idea. Your guess is as good as mine. As long, you know, we just hope that he's safe. You know what I mean? Nobody knows. We hear conflicting stories, and you know, I'm not a instigator. I just want to help people. That's all I want to do. You know what I mean? I don't want to cause shit. I don't want nobody hanging out. Everybody knows who I am. They know I'm cool, but they know my rules. You know what I mean? I'm here to help you, but I'm not here to get anybody in trouble or cause any shit. So,
you're here. You know, Food Not Bombs does do that meal twice a week, and they might give you some advice on how to do it. This is not about Food Not Bombs, it's about the community campout that's coming up next Sunday.
Okay.
But if you decide you want to get involved in that, come on down.
Sure. You know what I mean? I want to help as much as I can. You know what I mean? That's my goal. I do in-home support. I've worked with the shelter. I worked with the homeless and mentally disabled for the last 7 to 8 years. So, you know what I mean? It's a big problem. You know what I mean? Not just here in Santa Cruz, everywhere.
You outdoors or indoors?
I'm indoors right now, thank God. You know what I mean?
And
I'm on the MATCH program.
And what is the MATCH program?
MATCH program is a program where you are given residency for recovering alcoholics, and you get a subsidized rent, you know what I mean? And you get
back subsidized?
Well, really good subsidized. I live in the flats. I have the biggest studio. I pay $237 a month. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
And take me in as a roommate.
I'm blessed, you know what I mean? And, you know, you just got to abide by their rules, you know what I mean? I'm here to get back on my feet, get a job, be an outstanding citizen, not just a basic citizen, you know, just to do my part, that's all, leave my mark, you know, with no, my mark means helping, not leaving bruises. So, you know what I mean, that's what it's all about, just helping.
Seems to me the city likes to leave a lot of bruises on the homeless community.
Well, you know what I mean, they have their own issue, you know what I mean, they have their own things. I don't want to get involved in that. I just want to help the people that I can. I'm doing this in memorial of my mom. When my mom passed away, I wanted to make sure her sacrifices for us kids didn't
go
unjust.
Your mom's name was?
Joanne. And I didn't want them to go unjust, so I figured the best thing to do is give back, so that's why I'm doing this.
Well, John, thank you. And if people want to give you some assistance with this pantry project, which may or may not, sounds like you're not as clear on that you were going to do it as you were before, but I'd suggest, again, Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6, Food Not Bombs. They could give you some tips. They have access to kitchens themselves, and you could work with them for a while, see how you can volunteer with them.
That's why I was hoping to speak with Pastor Joel tonight. I've dealt with Pastor Joel on a yearly, like the last couple of years, so that's why I'm here tonight, not only to peer speak to the homeless, but to ask, you know, Pastor Joel if I can get any help. So,
he does this thing twice, well, once a week, and then Ron does the thing here on Thursday.
Yes, but, and I can make up the days that he's not there, and just like in the morning, because they're not going to have no more breakfast, no more dinner, no more clothes, no more showers.
What's been the impact of that?
It's been hard, you know what I mean? It's very hard, you know what I mean? How do you go around trying to better yourself when you can't even take a shower? You can't even be clean. You can't wash your clothes. You can't sleep somewhere. You got to hide everywhere where the Rangers are coming. But they have everybody has a job to do. It's their own curriculum. Whether they're bad guys or good guys or this and that, the other, they all have jobs to do, just like we do, me and you. I have a job to help the homeless, and that's what my job is. That's what I'm going to do.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Good luck, man.
Thank you.
Well, I'm walking around the back of the Red Church where the Pauli Penny University is often. Greetings. Any street reports?
Pardon?
Street reports?
I can't hear you.
Any street reports?
Oh, no. I know.
Okay, no problem. So we're talking with
Sea Otter.
The Sea Otter. We played you. So we're talking with
Leticia.
And Leticia, you're outside.
Yeah.
And where'd you sleep last night? If you wanted to.
Behind some walls.
Tickets? Any hassle?
No, we were hiding.
How many of you?
Two of us.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
35 years.
And have you been outside behind a wall all those 35 years?
No. It's only been a couple of weeks.
And how did that happen?
I There's mold in my house.
Really?
Yeah.
You had to leave or the landlord kicked you out?
No, I just don't like living there because there's mold.
So you, what kind of, was it, do you have money for rent? Or?
Yeah.
You're looking for another place?
Yes.
Anything else you want to say, Leticia?
Yeah, they should bring back the shelters, food and clothing and all that, because people are out there freezing at night. They don't have no blankets, so I gave them a couple blankets.
Good for you, babe. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any reports from the streets, sir? No more reports?
John? It's hard out there. It's hard out there. It ain't getting no easier.
I got you. Thank you.
I'm trying to get a solid 8 hours sleep without being interrupted somewhere.
Even on, yeah, even a liquid 8 hours sleep. Any reports?
Hot.
Hot? Hot. Any reports from the street? Any street reports? Any reports from the street, dancing woman?
No.
No. Sir? Well, any street reports?
No.
Any reports from the street of any kind?
I don't want to be a Santa Cruz idiot, stuck on drugs and believing I'm oblivious.
Thank you, sir. A musical number, thank you. Any street reports?
God's still winning. He's victorious.
All righty. Any reports from the street about what's happening out there? You shake your head. All right. Any street reports?
No.
Thank you. Any reports from the street for free radio?
No, thanks, Sam, but I love what you do and stuff.
Oh, thank you. All right.
Oh, you know everything, you know the routine. You know everything. I don't deal with assholes. I wish I have a hard time, but whatever. Hey, I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any street reports?
Not yet.
All right. Yeah. Street reports of any kind? Any... Okay. Any reports from the street?
What?
Street reports that you want to pass on to free radio?
Yeah, there's a... They got trillions of dollars for war, but nothing for the poor.
True enough. And we've been talking with?
$10 trillion in the last dozen years.
And what's your name, sir?
Mike.
Thank you. Any reports from the street?
Where I'm at, it's peaceful. Nice. No hassle, no cops, no nothing. I'm well hidden.
Excellent.
They'll never find me.
All right. Keep up the good work and stay undercover.
I will.
All right.
Undercover.
You want to say your name for our record?
I'd rather not.
Keeping a low profile.
Law in this country instead of all these other welfare things.
Key program?
Yeah, a minimum of $6,500 a month income for all Americans.
I kind of like that figure. Thank you. Any reports from the street? Any street reports?
Yeah, there's no housing.
True enough.
They're giving out all these Section 8 vouchers and there's no housing to back it up.
We're talking with?
Oh, Jeannie. I was born and raised here, and I can't find a place to live. I have a Section 8 voucher, and there just isn't any.
How long have you been looking?
Almost a year. I'm almost run out, and so I'm going to lose it.
And so, have you been
I've
out?
I've been homeless so long that nobody wants to look at you, and there's just not enough Section 8.
So, do you have any idea how many actual Section 8 options there are, and how many people are on the...
I don't know. I'd like to know.
Good question.
They keep signing them up.
So what do you do at night? Where you suffer outside?
Sleep outside.
Any hassles?
I know, because I go and I, you know, lay my stuff out and then I leave in the morning.
Alone or in company?
Alone.
So, even though you are a relatively short woman, you're trained in karate and all the lethal arts. Yes?
I just have a good mouth. No, I've never been afraid. I've never been hurt at all.
Good for you. And how many years have you been outside?
Probably about 12.
Maybe you should give classes.
I would like to. In neatness.
Well, how to clean camping.
Right, how to be...